From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Schulman.
Welcome back into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. It's been a bit of a lengthy hiatus, but we are back and we have sports to talk about, and not just sports in general. We've got Syracuse basketball to talk about. What is better than that? Owen Valentine joined by Ben Schulman. And Ben, how awesome is it to have SU basketball and Cuse basketball back on the docket?
You know, I know sports are coming up soon, but it was getting to be too long. Like, at a certain point, I need something. It's a bonus that it's a Syracuse something, because pro sports right now, there's too much to deal with in terms of collective bargaining and all that. Mm-hmm. I just want some pure basketball where everyone's clearly just doing it for the money. And that's what we have here at TBT. And
everyone doing it for the money.
Everyone, you know, that's what I like. It's for $1 million. There's no secret.
There's no secret. It's right out in the open. No hiding it. No brushing it under the rug. Everyone there is after $1 million. And for Syracuse basketball, you get to do it in a fun way, and it's coming back with a bunch of SU alum and a friend from down the road in Colgate. But Syracuse basketball, Boeheim's Army after it, and they are back in action. They won their first game earlier this week, and it's been kind of a fun situation to see these guys back in action and get back into the groove of things, despite not the typical buildup. But when they got on the court, it seemed like everything just started to figure itself out right off the bat.
Yeah, and to me, you know, there was just some sort of nostalgic feeling, even though it's not that nostalgic, when they set up into the 2-3 zone. As much as I can get tired of the 2-3 zone at times, you know, I saw it, and it just brought a warm feeling to me. And although they didn't play it the whole game, which kind of surprised me, it was nice to see Syracuse basketball and see some of the guys that, you know, some guys that we have seen in Boeheim's Army before, lots of new faces as well. And the team looked good. They looked pretty good in their first matchup. I thought they, you know, they could have shot the ball better, but they were pretty strong coming out of the gate.
They got the win against Men of Mackey, a group of Purdue alumni. And it seemed like, despite everything that you kind of had, because there were just a lot of questions going into everything, with everything going on with COVID and the bubble that they had. So to see them kind of come together and figure things out in the 2-3 zone way, and then Ryan Blackwell, head coach for Boeheim's Army, figuring things out, mixing in a little bit of man-to-man, which is something that outside of their professional careers, you've never really seen these guys do in an orange uniform, because it's then that strictly 2-3 zone. So they've got that in the back pocket. They've also got the man-to-man. So it's a fun little mix to see them switch up these defenses that Jim Boeheim himself is not too keen on switching in and out of, but they seem to be able to do it, and they found their spots where each one is going to work well. But it was fun to see this group get back in action. You said it, a lot of old faces, a lot of new faces, but they come together. Some have played together in the past. Some of them just know each other from the alumni base. But to see these guys, to see the guys like Eric Diebendorf, Demetrius Nichols as some of the older guys, and then some of the newer guys as well. Will Raymond from Colgate, fresh out of college. You've got, Tyler Lydon was supposed to. He's a little bit newer, but he's out. John Gillen and that group, to kind of see all these different generations of SU basketball from the 2000s and the 2010s come together and really show their skills.
Yeah, and I will say, just about the man-to-man, I don't think I'm actually right here. I think it was selective viewing. But I swear, every time they went man-to-man, they got beat off the dribble. every time I was, we got to get back to zone. Like, what are we doing? And I think I just wanted to see it. And in reality, I do like the mix of zone and man, but it was for the first couple of minutes, they went man to man a few times and it looked like they had forgotten how to play man to man again. So that was interesting to watch. And I know Brandon Trish, one of the players on the team who wasn't with them last year, but has been with them in years previous. Mm-hmm. He said one of the hardest parts of coronavirus in general was he couldn't play defense on anyone. Like, you can go into a gym and you can shoot, but you can't simulate defense. And so I know that, you know, there was definitely some cobwebs to get out coming out of the gate, but he was great. Dievendorf, of course, you know, he's the story of the game. It's crazy on one hand how he gets counted out every year, how people go into the tournament and say, can he really do it again? But it's even more crazy that after not playing professional basketball or really organized basketball in general throughout the year, he can come in against legitimate pro players, even if some of the guys – on the Purdue alumni team you haven't heard of, or some of the guys that they're going to play against Sideline Cancer you haven't heard of, they're strong professional players in European leagues. And he outplayed everyone in that 76-69 win.
20 points in 26 minutes. He just seemed like he picked right up where he was the last time he played in the tournament and the time before. And you said every year it seems like you just kind of expect that this is his year where he kind of phases out a little bit. And he just shows up in game one, shows everyone that he's still got the left-handed scoop, can still get to the rim, can still facilitate. And he's kind of like Ryan Blackwell's assistant coach. When you'd hear them mic'd up in the huddle, he was the one that was going to chime in and give a little bit of insight and tell the guys what's going on and provide another set of eyes. And it just kind of goes to show that he's got that coaching background with him. Everyone else is still playing a little bit, whether it's overseas or wherever it is. But he's got that coaching insight, and you can definitely see him and Blackwell kind of pairing off each other in the huddles and working with those two different perspectives.
And I got to say, one of my favorite parts of watching TBT so far is hearing all the talking. Like, I really like not just hearing the coach, but hearing the players communicate on the court. And I think that there's kind of a funny thing to, you know, now, like, whose fault it is on defense every time someone, like, there's no someone should have switched, but you're going to blame the guy that got beat or whatever. Like, you hear the guy tell him right to his face, like, that was your man. So that's been really fun. But Dievendorf, as you said, his leadership is invaluable, both on the court, but in general, just in the locker room and as a coach in the huddle. And I know from a conversation that I had with Kevin Belby, the GM of the team, that we'll hear a bit later, he said Dievendorf keeps telling him that he can take a step back, that he's willing to accept a bench role if they want to give him a bench role. And Kevin's just saying, what do you mean, man? You know, like, you scored 20 points in the opener. He's arguably the best player on this team. And, you know, a guy like Brandon Trish has been an MVP in the Italian league before. He's a very good basketball player. And I thought, despite the fact that the stats don't really show it, Trish had just 10 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds. I thought he actually made a major impact on the game. I thought he controlled the offense and really set his teammates up well.
I agree. He looked really comfortable right at the top of that, facilitating. And I was surprised to see how well he got to the rack at certain points. When he wanted to, he could, but he definitely found that kind of in between. I can score if I need to, but I can also facilitate. I can control this offense and kind of work other guys into the game. And that's what I like to see out of him. And you mentioned it, the stats don't necessarily show how much he did, but he looked really confident. He looked strong. And he was exactly who I wanted to see Syracuse and Boeheim's Army have the ball at the end of the game and kind of running that offense. And I was a little bit up in the air at the end of the first half when you saw, I believe it was Gillen who was facilitating as the clock was running down. I wanted to see the ball in Trish's hands. Obviously, Gillen proves me wrong and finds Malachi Richardson in the corner for 3 at the buzzer. But I think that's going to be the spot where you see Trish start to excel, because he seems so comfortable, so calm, and he's got both those options. He can get to the rack. He can shoot the ball if he needs to. And I thought he did a good job controlling the offense. So it's good to see those two guys working off each other. And then when you've got Dievendorf facilitating a little bit or running the top of the offense, when you've got Trish doing the same thing, there are so many shooters on this team that you're going to be able to find open guys, especially off of a little dribble penetration.
Yeah, that's why I like Trish especially. He doesn't need to dominate the ball. He'll control your offense, but he's willing to take a step back. Like, I thought he really picked his spots to attack right in the beginning of the first half, and then near the end of the game was when I thought he got real aggressive. And in between, he was finding guys like Malachi and finding guys like Devendorf or Dante Green and really helping just get everyone involved. And when I say Dante Green, I have to stop and talk about him for a second. I don't want to switch the topic up again, but this gives it away immediately. But guess who led Syracuse in plus minus this entire game?
It's got to be him.
Dante Green. And you know, he has 60 points, 9 rebounds. The total stats are good. Then you look at 3 for 12 from the field, and you're thinking, well, that's not great. But I just thought he was a spark plug for the offense. Every time he got the ball, high energy, he's going to make a play. He took too many threes. I'll concede that.
Yes. You know,
he shouldn't lead the team in three-point attempts with 7. if he hits more than one, then maybe. But I think 7 is a little too many. But I thought when he drove to the basket was really when he excelled. I mean, he went to the line 10 times, made 9 of them. If they can just get him driving a little more, he's a lot more athletic than I think a lot of the bigs that they're going to see going forward in the tournament.
And that was one of the major question marks when you saw a couple of guys drop out for Boeheim's Army late, right before the tournament. How could the big man play stack up against some of these other teams? And Men of Mackey puts on a big competition early. That's a tough challenge against Isaac Haas, who is a 7'2", 7'3", kind of up in the air as to what he weighs. And to see Dante Green compete with him that entire game, he held him to 12 points, 8 rebounds, which I think is very manageable when you look at the size discrepancy between the two of them. I think it's like 2 or 3 inches height-wise and then 50-ish pounds between the two. So to see him compete, and he looked strong on the defensive end, really kept Haas in check and actually picked up 4 steals. And I think he said after the game that he thinks Boeheim would have been really impressed with his defensive performance, which is something that was not always said from his career physically at Syracuse. So that was fun to see. And so to see him step up and figure that out was kind of a good one. And when you look at the next game, which we'll get into a little bit later, and you look at what Sideline Cancer has to offer, it's not as big of a team. So he's going to be able to use his size to a little bit more of his advantage. And then also the rest of that team will seem to be able to fit in and crash the boards and rebound a little bit better when they're not going up against someone as tall as Isaac Haas.
Yeah, I thought it was a decent rebounding game, especially when you go up against a guy like Haas. You can only do so much just because of his sheer size. There's no one on Syracuse that's – I think Green is the closest at within 5 inches. I don't think anyone else gets up nearly even close to 7 feet tall. I would like to see a little more Will Raymond, though. I thought Will Raymond was pretty productive. And I think that these guys who just graduated – I mean, it's kind of stating the obvious, but – I want them on the floor because they're frankly some of the guys in the best shape right now. They just came off playing their last college season, and Raymond was the Patriot League's leading rebounder. So I want to see him. He brings a lot of energy. Only came in for just over 11 minutes, but in that time, 4 rebounds, 3 of them on the offensive side, almost half of Syracuse's O boards, and then 4 points as well. I think he, like Green, can play both inside and outside and really stretch out some of these bigs that don't want to leave the key on defense.
I think it was Mike Waters from Syracuse.com had probably the perfect comparison for me. He reminded me a lot of Marek Dolezal. He seemed to be getting those hustle plays, getting after the boards, getting after those smaller things that don't necessarily show up on a box score. He seemed really active. I think that he can be a really good spark for this team. And I think that when you consider his size plus his rebounding plus his ability to shoot from anywhere on the court, he's going to be a really nice asset to this Boeheim's Army team down the stretch. And now to kind of give a little bit more insight as to everything that Boeheim's Army is going through, we bring on Kevin Belby, who we caught up with earlier today, the general manager of Boeheim's Army, to give a little bit on the bubble and this team as a whole and to start to take a look ahead as to this Sideline Cancer matchup later this week.
I'm glad to be joined today by Kevin Belby. Kevin is the general manager of Boeheim's Army at TBT and the vice president of sports broadcasting with the Montag Group. Thanks for joining us today, Kevin. How are you doing?
And thanks for having me. Doing as well as we can under these circumstances, but you always got to find a positive. And for me, the positive this week is being able to watch basketball on ESPN. So I think that's been pretty fun.
I think that's something that we've all been cherishing this past week for sure. And talking about just the experience there before we get into basketball, how has life been in the bubble so far? How has the adjustment been from maybe more regular quarantine now to this complete quarantine in Columbus?
Yeah, I would say, look, all the guys, including myself, you know, we have been following the guidelines and everything leading up to this. No one's really been out and about too much. But this is obviously another level of staying inside and away from others. The first day was very challenging because we showed up. We first took two at-home COVID tests. We took them like we're doing this interview, actually. We took them over Zoom with a medical practitioner on the line to verify our identity and make sure that we were doing it correctly. And then when we showed up on site, the first thing that we do is take a temperature check, and then a COVID test. So after taking that COVID test, each person was basically put in a hotel room and sequestered and quarantined on their own until the test results came back. So we could not leave the hotel room at all for those first 24 hours. We couldn't meet as a team. We couldn't eat as a team. We couldn't practice being in the gym. So that first day was challenging mentally and physically for the guys to not be able to do anything. But the purpose was, hey, if one guy on the team is positive, since we haven't practiced or met or ate together, they'd be able to send that one player home and not the whole team home. Now that, you know, everybody's gotten together, if something were to happen with one guy, the entire team would be eliminated. But, you know, after getting past that first day, I think we've all adjusted. We've been here for a week now, which is kind of going pretty quickly. Everybody's used to wearing the masks. They have all signs in the elevator, you know, where places where you can stand in the elevator, places where you can stand in the hotel lobby if you're trying to go and talk to the people at the front desk to make sure everybody's socially distant. So that part's, you know, been an adjustment, but I think we have adjusted. And, you know, once the game started, it did feel like basketball again, which was fun.
How did you spend that first 24 hours? I saw some of the players on your team used it to catch up on sleep. Others were just antsy about basketball. But how did you keep your mind occupied during that time?
Yeah, I think I what did I do? I mean, I think I did a little bit of work for my day job to try to stay busy. I also, and they encouraged everybody to do this. I played some Call of Duty. They encouraged everybody to bring their like Xboxes or video game consoles just to stay busy and have something to do. So I played some Call of Duty Warzone with my friends at home.
You're an Xbox guy or a PS4 guy?
Xbox
okay,
guy.
Yeah, I'm an Xbox guy as well. That's the right choice.
Yeah, we're in the minority, so it's good to have some fellow Xbox guys.
So now that you've passed the test, the team can mingle amongst themselves, hang out between games. Like, what's the situation going
on
there?
Yeah, we practice every day for 2 hours. You know, but that's all the practice time we get. There's no way for guys to go and lift weights if they want, or run on a treadmill, or any, or dribble, or shoot. It's just those 2 hours. So anything we want to do physical, we have to do in those 2 hours. And you know, we're in the gym by ourselves, so we don't have to have masks on. There's nobody else in there. We also have a team room, which is basically like a big conference room where we can kind of just go and kick it and eat together and hang out together and watch other games together, which is nice to have that space where we can just spread out a little bit without masks on and be together. But that's really it. I mean, it's, you know, it's normally like breakfast, then maybe taking a COVID test, lunch, afternoon practice, dinner, and then watching some of the games that are on. And then just kind of hanging out in the team room. It's been really the same thing every day. But so I think we've gotten into a good routine now that we're here for 7 days or so.
Sports fans are getting kind of used to this idea of a bubble, whether it's TBT or the NBA or MLS or the NHL. A lot of sports are taking this kind of approach at compromising the effects of COVID-19. What's something about living in a bubble that you wouldn't know or understand until you actually did it yourself?
Oh, good question. I mean, we're not even allowed to, like, it's interesting. We're not even allowed to talk to the other teams, you know, so we really don't even see them that much. But if we're going to get food and they're going to get food, we, you know, a lot of these guys know each other, play together forever. They can't even talk to each other. All the food is kind of like grab and go box type of food, prepackaged, to avoid, you know, cross kind of contamination. There's outside of every elevator door, there's a box of tissues. so that you can take a tissue and press the up or down button and press the buttons inside without physically touching them. So it's just things like that. And then, you know, we've been here a week and we've only been outside once. We've only been outside to go to the game. We walked to Nationwide Arena, which was about two or three blocks away. Kind of walked as a group with security, socially distanced from them. So I think that that's been a challenge too for the guys. It's just, you can't go for a walk, you can't go for a run. So, you know, we really have to stay inside our little bubble here. And it's important. We have to preserve the bubble and keep it safe and healthy for everybody to make sure that we can play games.
So Boeheim's Army returns a lot of core players like Brandon Trish, Steven Dorf, John Gillen, but there are a handful of new faces as well. How long after the last tournament did you start recruiting players for this tournament?
I pretty much start recruiting players the day that we lose. And I actually think I did do that last year. Last year, Demetrius Nichols was probably – I mean, I can pretty much assume Eric Diefendorf's going to play every year. And he's the only player that's played with us all six summers now. Last summer, I really wanted Demetrius Nichols to play. He wasn't able to due to an ankle injury. And he's actually – after his playing career is over, he wants to become a broadcaster. So he's been working on doing some things in the media. He actually broadcasted our games last year on the radio. So – up in Syracuse for ESPN Radio Syracuse. So he was there, he saw us lose, and I just said, we need you next year. And he said, God willing, I'll be there, and he's here. So, you know, that's really how early it started. You know, it normally starts right away, especially when we lose, we haven't won yet. I'm thinking about, man, what could we have done better? What pieces could we have had, and what pieces can we have going forward to make sure that we win following year?
How much do you rely on your players to help you with that recruitment, the returning guys, versus just the recruitment that you do yourself as well?
Yeah, well, I think that Eric Diefendorf he's really like our team captain, and he's become a big piece of what we do. And he's involved, and I have him reach out to different guys, especially new guys, to make them feel welcome and comfortable. Ryan Blackwell also has been our coach now for 5 years, so he's involved in the process. And again, I want him to have contact with guys so they feel comfortable playing for him. So I, you know, those are really the two guys that would help the most with all that type of stuff.
So of the new guys that you picked up, it's tough to single one or two out, but which ones are you most excited about perhaps on their impact for Boeheim's Army this year?
Yeah, I would say, good question. I would say that the two for me are, one, Brandon Trish. He has played in the past, but last year he was supposed to play with us. He was the MVP of his Italian league, and he was in the playoffs, and about 4 weeks before we were supposed to play, he split his kneecap, and he was having an amazing season. I think that he's playing as well as he ever had played. And I thought that we would be okay. We added a couple other guys. We wound up missing him a lot more than I even thought we would. There's a reason why he's the all-time winningest player at Syracuse. His leadership, his defense, his calm demeanor, his offensive versatility. He could score 20, or he could score two and give you 9 assists. He really can do a lot on the court. We missed him, so I'm really happy to have him back. And then the second guy, I think, would be Malachi Richardson. You know, just as a fan, seeing what he did at Syracuse in his 1 year and going to the Final Four, I mean, the guy's a winner. He's a competitor. He's an NBA-level scorer. And getting to know him here this week, I've seen how much of a professional he is. You know, he really carries himself the right way and is very mature. He's only like 24, but he's very mature. He really respects the game, works hard at it, treats it as a craft, and wants to win, you know. And I think that some guys who played in the NBA and come into this thing, they just think that they're going to come out and score 25 a game because they were a draft pick or whatever. You know, he respects the competition, and he's ready to show that he's the best player in this tournament and deserves to be in the NBA.
Yeah, I was really excited when I saw that you guys picked up Malachi. He recently played for my hometown, Toronto Raptors. So I got a good taste of him in the NBA and, of course, watched him at Syracuse as well. The last few months before this tournament obviously were not the typical lead up to a TBT. How did the pandemic affect your team's preparation, and how did it affect your preparation individually?
Yeah, so it was really weird. I was at Greensboro for the ACC tournament. It was my brother, Sean. He was on the team at SU. It was his senior year, and was really, I thought that we were going to make a run and win the tournament. And we had our best game that Wednesday night, I believe, against UNC. So, and then everything kind of fell apart. So after that, I stayed in touch with the guys and girls at the tournament, and they had basically said, look, we're doing everything we can to make it happen. It was a weird spot because I was basically preparing and planning for something that might not happen. Asking guys to play in something that might not happen. But about 2 months ago, and I was just, and I was wondering if it was just going to be a giant waste of time. But about 2 months ago, Dan Friel, co-founder of TBT, called me and he said, no, this is happening. 100% it's happening. It's going to look a little different, feel a little different, but we're going to play basketball. We're going to have a tournament. And then about a week after that, he called me and said, not only are we playing, but we're moving the whole thing up 3 weeks to the beginning of July. So we really hit the throttle and started pounding the pavement, just kind of finalizing roster details and things like that. The tournament explained to me what their health and safety plan was going to look like, and I felt very confident in it. The guys felt good in it. And, normally I have to convince guys to play and try to tell them why it would be good for their careers and how much fun it is. But this year, more than ever, guys asked me to play, and they just wanted to be part of it. They've been sitting on their couches like the rest of us. And, to have an opportunity to compete in this thing for $1 million on ESPN when there's no other sports going on and nobody knows when they're going to get their next paycheck, a lot of times, you can't beat it.
Did anyone on the team express any apprehension or nervousness perhaps about going into a bubble like this, whether it was health risks or leaving their family or something to that effect?
It's definitely, I think it's definitely something that everybody thought about, but because of the tournament's health and safety plan, they felt good. I mean, in some ways, this is the safest place in the country, if not one of the safest places in the world to be. You think about, there are people in the White House who are positive for coronavirus. There's here in the bubble, we've all taken and passed. Today was my 7th COVID test. So it's very secure, this bubble. Everybody that's here has been thoroughly tested. Once we're out there on the court, you need that because this is a contact sport. So there's no hesitation about getting up in your man, playing good defense and all that type of stuff, because guys are confident that everyone here is doing the right things and is healthy.
By test number 7, is there still any nervousness? I know some of the guys expressed in some Syracuse.com articles and on Twitter that they were nervous earlier in the tournament. But by the time that you're this far in, do you still get that little gut feeling when you take the test, or are you confident now that everyone's going to be negative and you'll be able to continue?
Yeah. I think that after the first test and everybody passed, I had a huge sigh of relief after that. But then I started to get anxious again, because learning more about the science of it is that, and I'm not going to do a good job explaining it really, but if you take a test and you pass, then that doesn't mean that you don't have the virus. It means that you didn't have the virus a certain number of days before that. The tests are basically a snapshot of about 8 days before. The virus can essentially lay dormant in your body and can grow, is the way it's been explained to me, over the course of a couple of days. So if you're negative on a Tuesday, you could still be in your room and have not seen anyone and be positive on a Thursday. So once I understood some of that, my anxiety went up, just for the entire team, because like I said earlier, once we started to practice and meet here in Columbus, one positive test would result in the removal of the entire team. And I just think that there's nothing worse than it's one thing to lose. It's another thing to not be able to even compete and leave it all on the floor. So I think at this point, theoretically, everybody who has, you know, theoretically, we've been here long enough and have taken enough tests that we should be fine, that, you know, the bubble is truly secure now. But, yeah, I mean, we have one result left, and knock on wood, fingers crossed, you know, looking forward to getting those negative results so we can continue to play.
So a former Syracuse star, Tyler Lydon, was supposed to be one of the big newcomers to the roster in this tournament. How does his absence affect the team after he was sidelined with injury a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, I was really looking forward to Tyler. I know Malachi was looking forward to playing with him, former teammates. I mean, John and Andrew also played with him Tyler's sophomore year. But, look, I think that Tyler Lydon is – he's a guy who, to me, should be like a 10, 12, 15-year NBA guy. His skill set is suited for the way that the game is going, to be 6'10", 6'11", and be able to shoot threes at 40% and have the athleticism he has. He's a special player. So I was really excited to have him. There's not a lot of good big guys in this tournament, and a lot of big guys struggle in this tournament, but he has a ton of skill. He's not just the back-to-the-basket big guy, so I thought he would have flourished. But, you know, can't really control that. He had a hip injury that was nagging and just didn't feel comfortable to go and, you know, didn't want to make it worse, and I understand. So hopefully he can be with us next year when we're defending our championship.
After Lydon went out, you made the decision to replace him with the only non-Syracuse alum on the team, former Colgate star Will Raymond. What do you like about his game that made you want to put him on the roster this late?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I looked at a couple different options, and we needed somebody of some size, but I didn't want to be desperate and just add someone with size just because we needed someone with size. You know, I think that intentionally this year we wanted to play a little bit differently. We wanted to play faster and more aggressive from distance and smaller. So Will really fits those categories. He has good size, but he's more of like a perimeter player in some ways. He can shot 40% from three at Colgate. He's a very strong rebounder. He was the Patriot League Defensive Player of the Year, first team all Patriot League as well. And he's just tough as hell. And, you know, we kind of needed somebody who would be willing to do the little things, somebody who could help us inside, make shots when we need to, and help us spread the floor and play five out. So I thought he had a great first game. He's really adjusted well here with the guys from a chemistry perspective, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does these next three games.
So we're recording this on Thursday morning, which is 2 days before the matchup with Sideline Cancer. But before I get into that, I want to talk a little about the win over Men of Mackey on Tuesday. Eric Dievendorf was really the talk of the tournament all over Twitter during that 76-69 win. What is it like to watch a guy like Dievendorf, who doesn't play professionally, dominate tons of current and former pros?
It's expected, but it's also mind-boggling. You know, every year he says to me, hey, like, I'm ready, like, and I'm willing, if we need me to take a step back, like, I'm happy to come off the bench, whatever it is. But every year when the lights turn on, he comes out to play and he performs. And he hasn't looked like he's, you know, this is his sixth year playing for us. He hasn't looked like he's aged a day. You know, I think that to some extent you'd expect some level of decline, but there hasn't been. I think he's, to me, the most consistent player in TBT history, the best guard in TBT history, and he's our leader. He's our captain. He's our engine, and we'll go as far as he can take us.
How important is he as a leader, not just on the court, but in the locker room as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's basically like a quasi-assistant coach for us. He's our team captain, you know, and he physically on the court, he sets the tone for how we want to play. Hard-nosed, competitive, fearless. I think that those are the qualities and intangibles that embody him. And guys look to him to set the tone and set the example.
So in 2 days, Boeheim's Army tips off against Sideline Cancer in the quarterfinal. As the 22 seed, Sideline Cancer pulled off a pair of big upsets to make it this far. What's the feeling around your team going into this quarterfinal matchup against a highly motivated underdog?
Yeah, we feel great. I mean, we really wanted to get that first win under our belt and out of the way on Tuesday. And now that we did, you know, we don't play again until Saturday. So we have a good 3 full days to practice, rest, get on the same page, tinker with some things, work on some things. So we feel really, really strongly about what we're going to do in this stretch run here. And we just feel, and I personally feel that if we play our game, that nobody can beat us. So it's really up to us. It's not up to the other team. If we do what we need to do, we'll win the tournament and win $1 million.
In your eyes, and for people that haven't seen them play yet, what about Sideline Cancer makes them dangerous?
Well, they have a point guard, a guy named Marcus Keene, who led in 2016, 2017, led the entire country Division I in scoring, scored literally 30 points a game, every single game. So he's really the engine. It starts and stops with him. He's their leader. So we need to contain him. And if, you know, we can contain him, I think that we'll have a good shot.
So the Syracuse basketball community has really embraced Boeheim's Army as almost like an extension of the regular basketball program. What does the fan support mean to the team and to all its staff?
It's awesome. I mean, look, I don't know if we'd still be playing in this every year if people didn't care, because we haven't won the money yet, but guys have enjoyed it because in large part due to the fans and how much fans care. And, you know, it's really special for these guys. Like all of us, you think that college is going to last forever, and everybody tells you it's the best 4 years of your life, but it's also the fastest, and it doesn't last forever. And, you know, some of these guys were only at school for 1 year, one and dones and stuff. So for them to kind of relive the glory days, so to speak, and wear orange again and have Coach Boeheim support and have all the fans cheering them on, it's like a, I don't know, it's like a fantasy, you know. It's a unbelievable, unbelievable, unbelievable opportunity for these guys. It's like a giant college reunion, homecoming with your best college buddies, but somebody threw $1 million in the middle of the floor and there's a competition for it. So it's the best. That's why I love TBT. And I think that we see ourselves as a team based around the fans. You know, we've had different roster construction, different players every year that I think has kept it fun for the fans. Every year we've added different and new players. And, you know, without the fans, I know that we're not here today.
Kevin Belby, general manager of Boeheim's Army at the basketball tournament, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck on Saturday and in the rest of the tournament.
Thank you, Ben. Go Orange.
Another thank you to Kevin Belby, the general manager for Boeheim's Army, for taking the time. And now to continue that look forward, we look into Sideline Cancer, who Boeheim's Army will be matched up with this Saturday at 4 p.m. on ESPN. And it's a team that has had some upsets to get here, not necessarily who you would have picked to get to this point, but still a very interesting team with a couple of former NBA guys, as every team kind of has mixed in here, and a lot of good players and some interesting talent coming out of Sideline Cancer.
Yeah, I think Sideline Cancer is a dangerous team. They made a bit of a run last year, and they're doing it once again. And what you have to be worried about them is letting them hang around in games. Both of their first two matchups, the first one, a 93-91 win over Team Hines, and then the second one, a 76-66 win over Team Challenge ALS. Both times they were trailing late in the second half. And in terms of the Challenge ALS run, they went on a 19-5 run to beat Challenge ALS. And it was, you know, they couldn't stop hitting baskets. It was crazy. Their offense is a lot more well-rounded than I think people think it is. But of course, when you think about Sideline Cancer, it starts with Marcus Keene, the NCAA's leading scorer in the 2016-17 season.
He's such a prolific scorer. And when you look at a roster, to see someone who's really recent coming out of college, and not that recent, but obviously just a few years back, to be such a dominant scorer. And he looks the part. He's still got it right now. He's played a strong game so far in these first two games, and he looks like he's got still that little scoring pizzazz. I don't think he necessarily ever lose it completely, but you would think there'd be maybe some regression, but he still looks like he's got it. He's been strong. He's looked the part, and there are a few guys in this tournament that have had such a dominant scoring career at the collegiate level. Obviously, you've got guys that have gone on to bigger careers than what he has right now, but he's a true scorer, and he'll continue to do that. And I think it'll be an interesting matchup to see how Boeheim's Army comes after him and approaches defending a guy like that, because you've seen they did a little bit of that, or a lot of the 2-3, a little bit of the man. So to see if they go back and forth at all, or if they're thinking one is going to be a little more strengthy or more successful than the other, I'm interested to see what Coach Blackwell does with that.
So if you're unfamiliar with Marcus Keene, he spent 2 years at Youngstown State before transferring to Central Michigan, and that's where he put up 30 points a game, which got him to be the nation's leading scorer, as well as first-team All-MAC and an All-American. I think the offense starts with Keene, but it definitely doesn't end with Keene. There's a lot of other good players on this team. They're missing Diamond Stone, who scored 19 for them in the opener, and he spent some time in the NBA. But they have another guy with NBA experience, Jamel Artist, and Remy Abel is a guy that I really like. He scored 17 points for them in their last game, was a 2-year starter at Xavier. And I think he just provides three different levels of offense. He can go to the rim, he can shoot the mid-range, but he's not afraid to pull up for three either. And he tied for the team high in their last game with 3 3-pointers. I just think this team's a lot more well-balanced than a lot of people are letting on.
Yeah, Abel was 3 for 6 from beyond the arc, shot 50% from three. He's definitely dual threat in that aspect, can get to the rim, can do what he needs to, but also definitely has that three-point shot in the back pocket. He's a versatile scorer, and they do have options. Obviously, as you mentioned, no Diamond Stone is a big difference maker. He went down in an injury or with an injury in their first game, and it's their size. So to see him go out definitely changes the game and works a lot to Boeheim's Army's advantage, because they don't have that size that was anticipated. So to see a smaller lineup out of sideline cancer where they don't have that same size, in seeing Stone as a 7-footer. So to have that smaller look is definitely going to play to Boeheim's Army's advantage and something that could definitely help them down the stretch if they're going to be able to get some more rebounds and create those second chance opportunities offensively or to take the ball away and limit those chances for sideline cancer.
Yeah, I think there's a big opportunity to dominate rebounds, but Boeheim's Army has to be ready for Eric Thompson, the big man that stepped in replacement of Diamond Stone. Even when Stone was there in the first game, Thompson had 6 offensive rebounds that game. And in their last matchup, he had 7 offensive rebounds, 13 total.
This team double-double. They
crashed the boards hard. He was great. He had 2 big and ones in the second half. Was a major part of that 19-5 run, as you said, 15 points, 13 rebounds, double-double, 2 steals as well. And he played a team-high 35 minutes, no turnovers, no fouls. So he's really given productive minutes to the team. Syracuse can take the rebounding advantage here, but only if they really work hard, because this sideline cancer team crashes the boards on every shot.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think, as you kind of hinted at, it's going to come down to that matchup. When you look at how I believe Dante Green will be the one to get that spot again, to be playing down low against Eric Thompson, who is a much better height-wise matchup. But Thompson's a big boy. He's definitely got a little bit of size to him. So I'll be curious to see if Green can continue that that momentum from their first game and continue that into game number 2 against a guy who's a little bit smaller but still a big and a guy who's proven that he can compete at this level in this tournament. A pretty convincing double-double. He was not just narrowly sneaking over there. He had good margins to get across that line, and he looked strong. So I'm curious to see if Green can continue that or if Will Raymond can match up with him at all, because if neither of those guys, maybe Demetrius Nichols could do it a little bit, but if those guys aren't going to step up and if they struggle at all or get into some foul trouble, it's going to be just the typical Syracuse basketball game, but in the form of Boeheim's Army. So I'll be curious to see how they match up with him, because I do think that this is going to be an advantageous matchup to Boeheim's Army, but they definitely could still be caught a little bit off guard with the way Thompson plays.
Yeah, I think it's the most important matchup of the game. I think that Trish and Devendorf are better than Keenan Abel, but I don't think the separation is that much. I think really where you see the difference is the skill of Dante Green versus Eric Thompson. And I don't want to take anything away from Eric Thompson, but Dante Green looked great. It was the best 3-for-12 performance I've ever seen in my life. And I think that if he can just pound it inside a little more, I even liked his drives. I don't mind him starting outside, but if he can just attack the rim, that he'll be able to get Thompson into a little bit of foul trouble, because you don't want Eric Thompson playing 35 minutes. You want to get some fouls on him, because even if he's in there behind Stone, then who are they putting in after? And that's where Nichols and Raymond and still Dante Green can really dominate on the boards. But then again, sideline cancer, over 40 rebounds each of their first two games. Boeheim's Army, only 32 in there. So we'll see how this rebounding battle goes. It can go either way, but like you said, I think Boeheim's Army can take advantage here.
And that key that you kind of hinted at, Green with the majority of his points from the charity stripe, was able to get, I believe he was 9-for-10 from the free throw line. So if he can get that continued success getting fouled on his way up to the rim and put Thompson into some foul trouble, that's going to be huge for Boeheim's Army, because as we said, sideline cancer is already without their starting big man and their biggest man on the roster. So if Thompson can get into foul trouble, that's going to be huge for Boeheim's Army to continue that success and to continue to get to the rim, which they showed they can do despite being a really strong three-point shooting team as well. So I liked what you were saying in that Trish and Devendorf can narrowly outdo what sideline cancer has to offer, but this game will be won down low in the rebounding battle and to see how Thompson and Green and a couple of those other bigger bodies perform down inside the post, inside the paint, and whoever wins that battle, I think will definitely end up on top in this one.
Boeheim's Army and sideline cancer tip off at 4 p.m. in Columbus on Saturday. We'll see. The winner could take on Overseas Elite, this hyped-up team with Joe Johnson and Jared Jack. And pending some victories, we'll be back again. Not to be biased, but I think both of us would like to do this podcast again. So,
oh, yeah.
Not completely being homers, but wouldn't mind seeing a Boeheim's Army victory Saturday.
It all starts Saturday. And it not starts Saturday, but it'll continue Saturday. And this tournament goes, it's a pretty narrow stretch for the whole extent of this tournament. It's the final eight right now, the Elite Eight, whatever you want to call it, Syracuse or Boeheim's Army, sideline cancer, as you said, 4 p.m. on Saturday on ESPN. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week.